Begin transmission.
You are listening to Corellian Run Radio, your route through hyperspace to the latest news on Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Calling all aspiring radio announcers. We're looking for people from the community to help us record our fake sponsorship spots. If you've always thought you've had a face for radio, and you can record yourself reading our spots, we would love to have you lend us your voice to our podcast. Email us at CorellianRun@gmail.com for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Force Cloak, the combat warrior stealth that obscures your presence, reduces your threat, and allows you to run away faster than normal speed. All good things when your squishy friends think you are tanking that angry mob. Sith warriors, get your sneaky on with Force Cloak, the only in-combat stealth in Tor.
Hi, and welcome to Corellian Run Radio. This is episode 21, and we're recording on Sunday, April 17th, 2011. I'm Carla, and with me today is our normal host, Kathy and Roxanne.
Hey there.
Hey, guys.
Well, Kathy, what did you do this over this past week, or the last 2 weeks?
I haven't really done anything. It's been sort of nice, actually. I like that when that happens.
What about you, Roxanne?
I guess I sort of haven't done anything either. I finished Dragon Age 2 in like a kind of like a marathon weekend of like 20 hours of gameplay. So that was really fun. I mean, I shouldn't play Bioware games that fast because then you have to wait like 2 years for the next sequel to come out. But I was really, really impressed with it. It reminds me a lot of like the relationship between Dragon Age and Dragon Age 2 is similar to me with like Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2, because the idea that it's all centered around Kirkwall, it really reminds me of like F. Catla, and I thought that like all the NPC interactions were like a lot better. I love that the entire game takes place over like 6 years, so there's like a lot of time to just like develop those character roles and stuff. So I was really, really impressed with it just from a writing standpoint. So good job, Bioware!
Hooray! I thought of something that I did. I started a book called The Irreverent Curiosity, which is a book about the holy foreskin. It's a travel book about the weird practices of, you know, like holy relics in, right, in churches, I guess the Catholic Church. And it's really entertaining, so
okay.
I would recommend that to people.
It is nonfiction. It's not.
No, it is.
Is
it's
it?
Nonfiction.
Wow.
It's a travel. It's a travel book. So
oh,
anyway.
My goodness.
How about you, Carla?
Well, I went shopping and bought a new little video camera. And when I say little, it looks like a toy. It fits in the palm of your hand. But I needed a new video camera that shot, you know, HD and shot it in, you know, better quality than my 15-year-old Sony, you know. So I went and bought a new video camera, and
nice.
Yeah, I think it's gonna to suit my needs pretty good.
Yeah, spending money is always fun.
Oh yeah, I like to do that. So anyway, especially when I have it, you know.
Yes, that's the best part, actually.
Actually, it is. Okay, and that's about it. Well, that leads us to our host challenge.
Fact. You know it to be true.
Or fiction.
That's impossible!
I'm going to read three bits of information or three leads about the game. Two of them will be made up or not yet confirmed by BioWare. Only one will be a fact that is confirmed by BioWare. Your job is to pick out which one is true. Lead number one. Don't use Darth in your name when you start a new character, because you get the title of Darth when you start your brand new character for the Empire. Lead number two. There will be an underwater world that players will have to swim to. Lead number three. You need to take very good care of your companion, because you can kill your companion. So after hearing all three leads, which one do you think is the confirmed fact?
I know this one. Do you know this one?
Yeah, I know this one too. Miraculously. Yes. I feel like I never
know. We pick three.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Where did we hear that again? Was it Daniel Erickson?
At the UK event. Right? Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And we know that there is no underwater world because he also told us there's no swimming, right. Much to the horror of many of the people in the community.
You never knew that so many people love to swim until they're told they can't.
Right, and the titles thing, Darth, is something that you will be able to achieve. But
at a much higher level.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So excellent.
Absolutely.
All right, good job, Roxanne. All right, well, let's get on to the latest news in Tor.
From the Newsnet and beyond.
All right, well, the first thing we have on our list is BioWare released a couple weeks ago an official PAX East 2011 highlights video. Our article I would recommend people go to if they want to put names to the various faces that are on there, because there are a lot of people from our community that are well known. I mean, people from podcasts, people from forums, and that type of thing. We did an article on that, and we got a lot of help from the community, from various people that post in our forums, or especially Baylor from Darth Hater. He gave us a bunch over Twitter, so that was really fun. So you'll be able to see like Lethality and Larry Everett and Brooks Guthrie and mm-hmm. Dover's back is in a few of the shots from Darth Hater. So yeah, and the video I thought was a lot of fun. I thought it really captured the energy and the excitement of just being there, because it was really, really exciting. So I'm sure people have seen it, but yes, that was really fun that BioWare did that for the people who were not able to be there. Roxanne is actually in it.
So I've heard.
Did you? Yes.
I'm there for like half a second. Exactly what I look like, you're going to be able to see, I think, like my forehead from behind someone.
No, it's full face. but yeah, so we'll have a link to our article for people who want to go ahead and check out some of these faces.
And that leads us to the April 5th UK gameplay event. On April the 5th, BioWare went over to the UK, and you had to get pre-advanced tickets to be able to participate in this UK event, and they actually got to play the game. And you can see details. We have a link to it in our show notes. And also, there was a nice lengthy article written by Moon Over Endor about his 90 minutes of playing the Imperial Agent. And then there's also, we'll have a link to that, to Moon Over Endor's post, but we'll also have a link to the official thread of gameplay, where people have commented on what they discovered about the gameplay of the game at that particular event.
Yeah, that was nice. I think that it was Allison Berryman who posted it, and she tried to stick like the, because of course there were a lot of people on the thread commenting, even though they weren't there, and so she tried to stick, I think, the people who did the comments, who actually played the game. She put those at the top of the thread, and you can just click on those. And also, I think Tor Legends did a really nice roundup of like the little factoids that they got from reading through all the coverage that came out, and in our article, there's a link to that also. So if you want to kind of get a bulleted point by point overview, it's a really good resource. Also at the UK event, Doghouse Gamer was there, and they recorded one of the Q&A sessions. The sound quality is a little hard, but you can make out mostly what they're saying. And they were kind enough to provide a partial transcript, so there's some cool points in there. I think one of the things, as Carla said, is that Daniel Erickson said that you could kill your companion. And I don't, that might be the first time we've heard that. We've heard that you can, quote, lose your companion. I always interpret that as they get ticked off at you and leave for some reason.
Yeah, I wonder what they mean by kill. Because I wonder if, doing a gameplay decision that results in their death is, like, something, but I wonder if they mean, like, actually kill. Because it's kind of like, if you play Mass Effect, like, the, you know, Ashley Caden versus Rex, where it's, like, the active versus, like, a more passive role. But, I mean, either of those things is a pretty big deal, that you can totally just, like, get rid of a character from a game forever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really actually glad that that has, like, come to be confirmed, because, like, I mean, you know, as closely as they can emulate the first place experience of games like, you know, Dragon Age and Mass Effect, I think we know that's the kind of thing that BioWare can do really well, and I would love to see it resemble that, like, pretty closely. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Was there anything in that Q&A that struck you, Carla?
And no, not other than the kill the companions. Because, and the way he described it, I mean, he was very adamant about they're dead permanently. They're, you know, like, this is going to be a long game, and you're going to be there playing right. it a long time, and they're still going to be dead. I mean, he couldn't say it enough.
Yeah, I think he said it was the, you know, even if it's like 10 years later and you're still playing Tor, that companion is still going to be dead. Mm-hmm. So yes, he's sort of emphasizing, you know, you can't muck around in this game for the important stuff, because you'll get you'll get screwed.
Exactly.
But yeah, and I think a couple other things with the social points they mentioned were things we've heard about, but we weren't sure what they were for. We now know that you can win social points by being the person to win the conversation role.
Do we know what they're for, though? Like, what do you
right,
do with
no.
them? Okay.
I don't think we do know yet.
Not yet.
Just another little glimpse into that window. Valor points were mentioned, and is it Gabe Amatangelo? Was he there? Anyway, they said that those have something to do with PvP, but they didn't specify. And Daniel Erickson confirmed that rest experience is in the game.
Hooray.
So, yeah. Yay. All right. Well, that leads us to the Arten Away podcast. And I'm sorry I just butchered that name, because they're such nice guys. They could just talk and I could just listen to them forever. They have the best voices. One of the things, I mean, they did several clips, audio clips, in their podcast that they recorded.
Yeah, I think at the end of the podcast, they actually have their whole Q&A recording, because they were there at They Played. So you, if you click the link to their podcast and just kind of go to the end, it maybe is in the last 15 minutes or so, you'll be able to hear the whole unedited Q&A that they attended. And there were a few things different that came out from there. What were some of those
points? Yeah, one of the ones that I thought was really exciting is that the companions can fill one of the four slots. I thought, oh, that's cool. Because that's what we had originally heard, is that they can be part of your group and they can tank or heal or whatever. But
yeah. I think that this is the way I interpreted it. I don't think that we ever were told. I guess I always thought companions would be extra, that the mm-hmm. slots, the four party slots, were always going to be players, and they just hadn't decided if you would have these extra companion characters on the side. I never conceived that they would actually say that your companion character is going to take a player slot. That's very cool.
I had a similar reaction, and mostly because, and I don't know where I got this impression, but I always assumed that, like, the companion characters would be nowhere near to, like, the DPS or the healing power, or nowhere near just, like, the power level of, like, that another player could be. So, like, you would never even be able to think of a situation where you could sub in a companion for, like, a player character. So that's really interesting. I mean, maybe this gives us a little glimpse into, like, the level of, like, how strongly they supplement, like, the playing experience, just because they're able to, like, stand in a flashpoint or something like that.
But do you really think that they're going to be able to take the place of a player? I mean, I can see maybe having a DPS companion, if you're short DPS, mm-hmm. or maybe even off heals. And maybe off tank.
Well, I think for stuff, obviously, like, the ability to think on your feet and adapt to situations, a human's always going to be better. But the fact that they are allowing for, like, yeah, like, one of these four slots can be a companion character, I think says that, yeah, like, it's viable to use your companion, like, in one of these slots to fulfill the role of, like, a healer or a DPS. Maybe not healer, that seems a little ridiculous. But
well, and I think that in some of the feedback they have said that it's going to be much harder. They said especially two players and two companions is pretty tough. Didn't Daniel Erickson said he has tried that, and it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's more common for people to maybe do three players and a companion.
But yeah, don't think you would ever do it like yourself. Or, I mean, could you? I don't know.
Right.
Could you do like yourself and three companions?
No, no. How would that work? You can only have one companion at a time.
Well, I was just thinking, because you have many companions on your ship, right?
I know, but you can't. We can only pull one out at a time.
That makes sense.
That would stop that, although I like that idea. But anyway, I thought it was great, especially since I think maybe the last podcast we were sort of saying, oh, companions, they're just not as important as they used to be. So I was very excited to hear this little tidbit. We should add the caveat that they are continuously saying this is the way it is now. You know, there's still no companions in PvP or in war zones. And flashpoints, they're allowing them, but you know that could change. So we'll just have to keep saying.
Yeah, and they also, one of the things that had me going, was when they were talking about features after release, they said that future is all community,
mm-hmm.
and they mentioned space combat.
Yeah, Daniel Erickson sort of mentioned that almost as a joke, but obviously, yeah, they're hearing the community is clamoring for something a little more complex than what we currently have.
Than the system that they haven't played yet, but know that they don't like.
Now.
Crack me up.
Oh, Roxanne.
And this is also where, you know, this podcast and that interview, our Q&A is where we found out about the Darth title. And mm-hmm. It's really a high-level title. You really have to earn that, so.
Right. The other big thing was, and we have a clip, I think, right?
Right.
Is the Daniel Erickson being asked, mm-hmm. are there any more big planets that you're going to announce? And I love the clip. Can we play that?
So you've already got a lot of planets in the game. I was just wondering, do you have any more to reveal in the next few months?
Nope. That's a really big reveal. And to be clear, I mean, people were kind of querying about Tyrell 5. So, yeah, there may be flashpoints or other pieces of content in the game that take place on planets that we don't list on the planets page. We list the planet, we think of it as an explorable place that you can go to all your guys.
Yeah, there's fleets out in space, and there's asteroid bases, and there's all kinds of badass, cool little places you get to go and run around, and planets you get to visit. But as far as full, giant, this is going to take 10 hours of your life, no.
Okay.
We're done.
All right, so I love that long pause, and then Daniel Erickson just goes, nope. Yeah, and you almost think, oh, is he just kidding around? And you sort of like clinging to that hope. It's like maybe he's just being, you know, goofing off. But I think it's pretty clear by the time
they explain why, and then Stephen Reed reiterates that, like, yeah, there's no planets.
This seems real. So I don't know, Carlo, what do you think? Is that like, are you happy with the planet distribution so far?
Well, I'm not unhappy because I don't know how that's going to affect the world as a whole, but I can tell you it sure looks one-sided right now.
I know. When we have the 17 planets, and, you know, I just sort of quickly looked them over, and, you know, the Empire has, well, basically only two planets that seem clearly Empire Sith, and that would be Korriban and Dromund Kaas, which is the capital city. I guess Hutta is being included in the Empire because that's the starter world for two of the Empire classes. But Hutta almost seems more independent than anything else. So basically you have two to three Sith-aligned planets. We're just giving them Hutta because of the game. But the Republic, yeah, they got Tython, they got Ord Mantell, they got Coruscant, they got Alderaan, they got Corellia. And then all these other planets that are kind of in, you know, being contested because, you know, maybe there's an underground prison that the Republic was using and now the Sith are trying to get it back, or there's, you know, Kesh, that the Republic engineers were getting chemicals for their adrenals and the Sith found out, so they're trying to get it back. Or Ilum, which, you know, the Jedi were going to for their pilgrimages to get crystals, but the Sith discovered it, so they're trying to get it back. I mean, at least those planets, even though they're contested, they kind of have Republic beginnings, so I feel like, you know, they're really setting the Empire up as this, well, nomadic place that's just trying to, like, bully it themselves or, like, barge in on the Republic stuff.
Yeah, but I'm not real worried because we can take them back.
Right.
And Leia, if you're listening, we need to get on the bandwagon, okay?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I kept meaning to talk to Emleia. It's like, oh, I bet she's really upset about this because she was really annoyed, I think, when she was here because they hadn't announced an Empire planet. And so, what did she say, like a year or something
right,
like that?
Right.
I was like, oh no. So, Emleia, if you're listening, you're the first person I thought of when I heard this announcement.
I'm sure if any of us knew anything about lore, which we do not, someone could, like, explain to me why it's like this, because probably, I mean, because the Republic predates the Empire, which makes sense, right? So that's why they have everything.
Yes.
And so, then it's kind of like a Civil War rebellion type thing, where they're, like, trying to gain power. But it makes sense that it's not split down the middle.
Yeah, lore-wise, it completely makes sense. I agree. But when you're making an MMO, this is the kind of things that players notice, you know, and they're just like, wait a minute, are we getting short shrift?
What does it even sure mean, though, to have, like, a planet that belongs to your side? Like, I mean,
it's, you know, faction pride. What's the matter with
you? Faction pride.
But yeah, but does that, that doesn't mean that we can't, you know, that the Empire can't visit some of those other planets. They cannot visit.
Visit in air quotes?
That is like a, we want to infiltrate to take over.
I know you and 200,000 of your Mandalorian buddies are going to visit, like,
Coruscant. Right. But seriously, I mean, while I'm disappointed that it wasn't even like a third of the planets belong to the Sith or to the Empire, I'm really not that upset about it because I'm waiting to see what the whole play time and the play, you know, how is it going to affect playing? In other words, is there going to be future releases that are going to say, okay, you get to invade this and take it over because this is this big event, you know,
right,
you know, whatever. And as long as we can visit, whether it be good or bad visits, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm sure BioWare is not going to, you know, give the Republic 10 times the content to do than the Empire players. So
exactly.
I'm sure that they figured out the balance. It was
I was just thinking of, like, in a bunch of BioWare games, I'm just going to use Dragon Age 2 because I beat it most recently. But, like, because you are, like, you know, a refugee from Ferelden, but the entire game takes place in the Free Marches. So you're kind of like an outsider and, you know, you're not part of, like, the ruling class or the even, like, you know, the people who live there, and just how, like, that narratively is a lot more compelling than, like, this is my city and I live here and it's awesome and everyone loves me. It's really cool kind of to be the kind of, like, that underdog that everyone despises, and you know that, like, you can, like, bide your time and kind of, like, build up your factions and, like, take it back one day. So that to me is a lot cooler than be like, okay, how many planets do we have? We need to split down the middle, and one side will take half and the other side will take half. It's just like there's no tension if it's, like, evenly balanced.
I
like
agree.
Horde and Alliance, like, well, we own this continent and you own that one, and there's really no reason for us to fight because we could just, like, stay on your side of the room. Like, this is like a lot cooler.
And not only that, I mean, if you sit back and think about the lore of, and again, we all know that we're not all that hip on and up to date on all the lore, but when we go back and see that the Sith were almost annihilated, you know, by the Republic, it makes sense that there be more Republic planets than there are Empire planets, but that doesn't mean we're not on the comeback.
That's right. Things could change. All right. I think that's about it for the UK event.
Yep.
Do we have anything? All right. Good. Well, let us move on to Daniel Erickson's post that I found in the Dev Tracker, which came out about the same time, and he repeated a couple of things that we have already talked about. One of the first things is that caused quite an uproar in the community is the fact that he just out and said there will be no swimming in Tor. I told Carla and Roxanne we're not going to talk about this at length because I listened to about 5 podcasts and it was really interesting because it was definitely something that everyone found, 15 minutes of conversation and debate about it. It's like, all right, well, I'm okay with no swimming. I understand that people might like it, might want it, even just from the standpoint of that it's expected. It seems weird not to have it, which to me is actually the best argument. All the other arguments seem, not as important.
Well, I'd like to have it, but yeah. I can see that, I'm more than willing to wait. I'd much rather see, give me the game. I want to play the game. Yeah. We can swim later.
Go back in your mind and recount all those iconic Star Wars moments where Luke is like, swimming laps where people are fording the English Channel.
Yeah, Damien Schubert actually had a fantastic post on why he didn't think swimming was something that people should be missing. So I, we'll have a link to that. Go and read that. Listen to Torocast, Darth Hater and Tor Wars and Gamebreaker TV and all those other podcasts that had lengthy conversations. And, they have, I think both sides have definitely have points, but yeah, we're not going to worry about that right now. Go ahead.
Well, one of the good things that I wanted to point out about this Daniel Erickson post was the Datacrons.
Yes, I wanted to move on to that. So go ahead and explain what those are.
Well, a Datacron is, a permanently fixed holocron thing that is placed across the land, wherever, in the different zones or the different planets. And they said that there will be very few of them. They said single digits, but they can permanently add stats to your character. And what I hope that these Datacrons are, and I, in reading what other people are saying, they're whining about them, but I love the fact that you have to explore the land to go find them in a little hidden remote place. And they're not going to disappear. They're permanently there. They're always going to be there.
There's a fixed number. They're fixed locations that do not despawn. And I think that the rewards are this, they're not randomized. So if you find a specific Datacron, that one has a specific reward. I couldn't tell. There were a couple of different posts on it. I couldn't tell if every reward is a stat increase or if that is just one of the types of rewards. So we'll need to hear more about that. But yes, in people's defense, I like the fact that exploration is being rewarded in this game. Although I guess in defense of people who are against them, I also understand the criticism. It's like, well, yeah, for those first round of people, it's an exploration.
It's about exploration, then everyone else is just going to read the wiki.
Exactly. So that I'm curious as to why they chose to make them fixed.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that. I mean, let's compare that to what's happening in Rift. In Rift, there are very similar type, not stat-wise, but permanent-wise, they're Karns that you can go and find, but you can only do, just like these Datacrons, you can only do them once.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the same place, and yes, you could go to the wiki and find them, but I can't tell you how many I just ran across because I'm climbing a mountain somewhere, and it's right there at the tip top of a mountain in this most remote place, because I love to explore the lands, and I'm one of those completionists that I like to fill in my map, and I want to look at all the different areas, and now I have a reason to. And I also, in this post, they were talking about hidden treasures, and I'm excited about that. I want a reason to explore, because I want there to be more than just questing, and that's one of the reasons why they said they put things in the game like this, is to break up the monotony of questing.
Yeah, and I personally think it's fantastic. I'm real interested to find out if the people who are against it, I'm talking in broad generalizations here, but I feel like a lot of the people who are against it are the people who take raiding very seriously and are upset that something outside of raiding is going to be valuable. And I know that's kind of like, again, I'm talking and this is just a very generalized statement, but that's kind of the sentiment that I hear from people. They're like, this is game breaking. And now, you know, we're going to have to do it because the whole team is like, it's going to be expected. And, you know, that's just dumb.
And I think that's wonderful. I mean, so you have to do something outside of raiding. Don't get me wrong. I'm a raider. I love to raid, but I love other parts of the game too, you know, crafting and exploring and doing these different things. And I'm glad there's something like that out there.
Yeah, I agree too. And I'm definitely, you know, I haven't raided in a long time, but when I do it, I'm serious about it, and I do all the, you know, the crap that you have to prepare for. And yeah, it might be like a pain to me. I might, if it's just, yeah, it might. I can see where you might say, oh, it's another chore. But you know what? That's kind of what raiding is about.
Yeah.
And I don't begrudge a reward done in another way. I think that's really great. And it's kind of interesting when I was listening to the reactions of people, I was thinking about our interview with James Olin from PAX East and how he said it's funny that, you know, some people complain that we're not innovative enough, and other people, you know, say, why are you doing it this way? This is like a terrible idea. And I think this is exactly the type of thing that he might have been talking about, where when people hear something that's weird or something that they their gut reaction is that's wrong.
Yeah,
they
it's
hate
like
it.
Any change to the status quo is like ridiculous to them. It's like stat increases to non-raiders. What? Like, I don't want to have to do this, so no one should be able to.
Yeah, well, that raises another question. I mean, is a stat increase an appropriate reward ever? You know, and I can see why people, if someone is on the side of that's just a bad reward, no matter what the setting, then I'm more sympathetic to that mm-hmm. point of view. Because it is. But
how's that different than, like, gear, though, that gives you, like, plus 10 to strength or something like that?
Well, because, well, yeah, exactly. It kind of is, especially gear. I imagine that these Datacrons are, it's not going to be, like, 100 points of stamina, which equals to, you know, 1,000 extra health points. I think they said they're going to be, you know, they're not going to be game breaking. BioWare is not going to make it that way. So, but yes, I kind of agree, because now you get a piece that's like plus, you know, plus 12
in. Remember in Diablo in Kurast, where you would get those potions that would give you like permanent like stat increases. It would, like, permanently give you 500
yes.
health or something.
Yes.
Kurast is the worst. And now I hate Datacrons.
No, I thought, isn't that the little alchemist guy, the potion? Yeah, the potion guy, right?
Maybe, yeah.
I think he would, like, do a quest and he'd go, here's 5 points and something. Yep. Yeah, right. So, I don't know.
But they're so minute. That's what, you know, everybody just needs to calm down about it and really think about it. They said think single digits.
Yeah, I think they're going to be few and far between, and they're not going to be like this thing where suddenly you're overpowered. So, yeah, I tend to agree that it's probably not worth getting this excited about.
Yeah, I wonder, like, it's single digits, but I wonder what, like, the stat bracket is. Because, like, KOTOR is more like, you know, the D20 Dungeons & Dragons system, where, like, you know, the highest your strength is ever going to be is probably around 20. So, like, mm-hmm. so, like, D&D, the highest it's ever going to be is 18, generally. So, like, you know, going from 15 to 16 is a really big deal. Like, it's not like WoW, where you're like, I have 70,000 stamina.
Yeah, well,
so
whatever.
Is it on
is.
The D20 system? Do we know that?
No,
is it not?
We don't know. Yeah. Like that detailed. So I'm just going to trust that it's going to be scaled appropriately. And, you know, we'll just see how it works. And if it doesn't work, then that's what patches are for.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess the last thing that I found interesting about this, the Daniel Erickson post, there was a few things, but was the position of the dark light choices on the conversation wheel. We've been thinking, I think, that it's light, neutral, and dark, which is what we've seen. But Daniel Erickson says that they're actually positioned according to your class. So if you're like a Jedi Knight, that is the position, light, medium, dark. But if you're, say, a Sith Warrior, where you're expected to have the more dark, then that dark position will be at the top. And I think they said something about it. You have to mouse over it if you actually want it to tell if you mouse over it, the computer and your screen will show this is your light choice, this is your dark choice. Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to do that. So, but yeah, so that's, you know, trying to be helpful.
I think that what he was talking about, too, the reason why is because some people, you can use your number keys and do 1, 2, 3 to make your selections of, you know, top, medium, middle, bottom. Mm. And he's saying you're not going to be able to do that if you want to actually see what your choice is going to be. You're going to have to mouse over it. So it will say, this is light, this is dark, this is neutral.
Yeah.
You know
but
I mean?
I mean, they're positionally locked, according to your class. So it's never, it's not going to be like, as long as you're playing the Jedi Knight, the light choice is always going to be at the top.
Right.
That was my impression.
So it's not going to, like, move around. It's not going to be a game tricky. Where you have to, like, hunt it down.
My goodness. That would be horrible.
Or if they word the choices so they're ambiguous.
Well, I mean, that's a tough thing because it's that paraphrase system. So you only get, like, 3 words to, like, guess the implications of what it's going to be. So, like, that positional thing is really important because, like, I mean, that system is great, and I love it, but, like, there's been a couple times in, like, Mass Effect or Dragon Age where I've, like, said something kinda not exactly what I thought it was gonna be. I mean, and that's part of the fun of role-playing and playing that system, because it's wonderful to be surprised by the dialogue choices that you yourself choose, rather than reading the complete line and then submitting it and having it read back to you. So, like, surprise is great, but anything that can kind of cut down on that, so at least you know what you're choosing, is also great.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Very true. All right. Well, that leads us to the next Friday update of April 8th, where we talk about advanced classes. And one of my favorite ones was the sniper ability for the Imperial Agent. Imagine that, because that's what I want to play.
Yes.
And I love the new ability that can keep him entrenched in cover. It's called Cover Pulse. And it will actually throw people back away if they get too close.
Actually, I think those are two separate things. The Cover Pulse is the thing that, I think...
I think different than entrenched, you mean?
Yeah, I think there's isn't it... I thought it was like there is an ability that will keep you entrenched, and I thought the Cover Pulse was a separate ability?
Just to keep people...
To keep them away from...
Well, range. The way they...
I can't remember.
The way they have it written is... And you're probably right. But they two kind of go hand in hand as far as... my thinking goes, but of course
yeah,
it could be wrong.
Yeah, you'd probably use both those.
It says the sniper is now able to entrench himself, providing a viable initial counter against attacks that would previously knock him out of cover. And then the sniper also gained a cover pulse, which the player triggered a pulse mine that can knock back unsuspecting attackers away from the sniper.
Yeah,
so.
I like that. Yeah, you probably would use both those at the same time.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, and yeah, that was very cool.
But you're correct. It is two separate abilities.
The one that I was excited about or confused by was the Force Cloak ability, which is the Sith Warrior Marauder when he's the DPS Sith Warrior, right? The Juggernaut is the tank, but he has a combat stealth.
In combat stealth,
yes,
for your tank,
your
That's
warrior.
Beautiful.
Well, yeah. He's not technically the tank, although he could do easy off tanking, I guess. But still, the idea of a warrior with the combat stealth. Not only that, but he's the only class of spec so far that has any kind of in combat stealth. The other ones that we have already knew about, like the Jedi Counselor Shadow, they specifically say in a community Q&A that they do not have combat stealth. They only have like.
I also like how the stealth cloak makes you run faster.
Yes, it's the opposite of WoW.
Yeah, because you think of if you're being stealthy, you like slow down, have to like step quietly, and this is like you start sprinting, and then no one can see you.
But I think that's really cool because if you think about it, the whole object of stealth is to get out of the way, so that for AoEs. You know, because if someone AoEs you, I'm sure that's going to pull you out of combat. So if you can, like, stealth run and get out of that little area.
Is it cool if you're not the Sith Warrior doing it?
It's only cool if I am.
The way stealth works in all other games is that, like, you know, you stealth so that you can, like, assassinate someone. Because, like, so they can't see you, and you're sneaking up to make sure that they continue to not be able to see you. I don't know what the rationale between is. You're fighting someone, and suddenly you hide. Like,
yeah, well,
how?
That's
how?
Like, that's like the vanish for the rogue in WoW, right?
That's
which
stupid.
everyone just
cursed.
Hated.
Yeah.
Cursed.
Yes. So. Oh, man. What do they do? Look over there! And you look, and then they're like, oh, no. They're really fast and gone. Like...
So yeah, that's
this makes more sense because I guess it's like technology or magic or something like that. But yeah,
I suppose. But yeah, that's really I am entertained.
I can't
by this.
Wait. I can't wait to be murdered or evaded by people in armor.
And I'm hoping that since the Sith Warrior is getting this ability, that the Jedi Knight will also have that same ability. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. But you know. That wouldn't be fair. It's not fair.
Well, I am hoping that there is a counteraction to that so that you can, like, AoE or something and pop them out of that stealth run.
Mm-hmm. Stealth run.
That's great. I like that. That's Carla's new name for that. Let's see. The other big thing was what? The tanking. That now we have two new classes that can tank that we didn't know about. The Jedi Consular. And then the Sith Inquisitor have tanking trees that they can spec into. So, yeah. What do you think of that?
It's weird, right?
Very weird.
It's innovative. Don't hate it.
I don't hate it. It's just hard to wrap my mind around it because it's like, okay, well, why don't we just all heal and why don't we all tank and why don't we all DPS and why don't we all do this? And
Now it's weird for like the two classes that don't tank or heal. You're like, what's wrong with you?
Exactly. Well, I'm like, okay, my Imperial Agent is the only one that can't tank. That's Come on. What's up?
That's right. I know. And I who want to play the smuggler, I'm the other... Yeah, one of the other dumb classes that can, well, they can heal and they can DPS.
Well, I know we're going to get to this later, but I'm hoping that our DPS will friggin' rock, you know, because of it.
Well, no, yeah, let's just move on to this.
Because
this
anyone you're going to be fighting is going to be healing themselves.
Well, that's true.
Son of a bitch, no one will die.
Well, let's move on to this whole idea. What's going on with these class roles? You know, so now we have 75% of classes can choose to tank, heal, or DPS. They can't do all three at once, so they have to choose, but they have those options. Is this good? I mean, it is good. I'm excited by that, right? Or do we hate fact that now the lines are becoming, too blurred and there isn't enough distinctiveness among the classes?
I don't know. I think it's really hard to tell, having not played the game and having like no insight to the people who are playing the game, because I think worst case scenario is that you totally devalue the roles, I guess. And then it just becomes kind of like Diablo, where basically there's a bunch of classes, but you all sort of play the same. Mm-hmm. And like, because you do want the opportunity for people to become like specialized and become really good at a specific thing. And because otherwise, I don't know. Yeah, it just seems like kind of boring.
But are they doing that? I mean, for example,
no. Yeah, we don't know.
Well,
I think
we do know. Because they are clearly saying that you have to go and pick your tree of which one, you know, which way you want to go.
Right.
Which means, are you going to tank? Are you going to heal? Are you going to DPS? You know, you've got to choose your tree, and then
you have to choose a role, but those roles aren't tied down to classes, I guess.
Why should they be? I mean, if we're talking about making something innovative and doing something different and not the same old tank, DPS, healer, tank, DPS, healer, you know, why can't we treat these characters differently? I mean, I'm not sure that I'm gonna like this, but I'm wanting something new, and I think that I like the idea that we can't tell when someone walks up what role they
have. That's actually kind of cool. Yeah.
You know, if we're PvPing against them, we can't tell what their role is.
Yep.
We see that they're a smuggler, but what are they? You know, I mean, what are they? So
right. Yeah, and in fact, I'm jumping ahead to one of the community Q&A questions. Someone asked, is your gear going to tell what the spec is? And he said, sometimes it will, William Wallace said, sometimes you will be able to tell, sometimes you won't. Like in the case of the Jedi Warriors, the heavier armored one is the tank and the lighter armored one is going to be more of the DPS spec.
Right.
But for something like the Imperial Agent, you won't be able to tell because they're going to wear the same, you know, like heaviness of armor. So you won't be able to just look at them and tell.
Yep.
But they also, one of the, and again, we probably are jumping ahead on this, but armor is going to be playing an important role. And one of the questions that was asked, and again, I'm jumping, but was that if your spec changes, you know, if you go down one part of the tree and change your spec to another part of the tree, you're probably going to have two sets of armor.
Yeah, that question just seemed silly. Didn't they know what the answer to that one was going to be?
Well, they should have.
The idea that a person who is spec, who has a heal...
If it's within the same advanced class, it might not change, but if you change to a different advanced class, it's going to change.
Yeah, so in other words, you can't use your healing gear to DPS, and you can't, or vice versa.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the advanced classes are so... like role dependent and so different that like obviously it's going to be different, especially since they're saying that like one advanced class can wear different armor than the others, so yeah, your armor is going to change. If it's not even in the same bracket of like medium or heavy.
Well, okay, I'm kind of excited about this.
Yeah, so let's go back to your earlier question.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Do you think
should a smuggler who is going straight DPS, should his DPS be higher than, you know, one of these other classes, maybe?
Only has DPS as their role?
Yeah, because the smuggler only, you know, can't choose from three things. Right. Should his DPS be better than another class's?
Well, it should be the same. It shouldn't be better.
Honestly, I'm like Roxanne. Oh my god, I agreed with Roxanne.
Oh my god.
Is that?
I must be wrong.
But I agree with Roxanne. I don't think it really should be. I mean, in all honesty, I mean, I would love for it to be, since I don't get to tank as an Imperial agent. You know, I only have the two, you know, healing and DPS to choose from. I still don't think that my DPS or my healing should be better than anyone else that has the same skill, depending upon how they spec in their tree.
Right, just because that option wasn't open to
Correct.
You. I think I agree also. So, all right, well, okay, so here's another question. So we have this new thing where you have these flexible roles and, you know, a lot of people have different choices. How is this going to affect looting? Like, when a drop happens, is this gonna make it harder to say, that's obviously a piece for the healing smuggler?
I think it's gonna, and just based on nothing, it's gonna be, pieces of gear are gonna be geared towards one of those three, like, Trinity roles. So you're gonna be like, this is a piece of healing gear. And if you're a healing spec, then that means that's for you, right?
I think it's gonna be really hard, because it's gonna be the same thing that you have in games like WoW, that are, you know, where there are several classes that can wear the same gear, type of gear, for one of their specs. I mean, the guilds are and those that are in the group are going to have to make a decision early on. In fact, I would want to know this with anybody that I group with, is that we roll for whatever our main spec is that we are going into that group or that flashpoint as. In other words, if I'm going in as a healing Imperial agent, I can roll on gear that's appropriate for a healing Imperial agent. And just because someone has that as another off-spec or side-spec, that's not their job going into this event.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Because, like we said, you know, basically all but two classes can heal. So that doesn't mean that, like, all classes but two are allowed to roll on healing gear. Because right. Not everyone is going to play a healer. So you shouldn't be able to, like, roll on stuff that you're not using or currently.
Or,
you know?
Or you're not using to the
But you're going to get a lot of those looters.
Yeah, I think it
you're
is.
Like, but I have a healing spec. But everyone has a healing spec.
Exactly.
I think it's going to cause problems, and I think it's going to have to be self-managed, you know?
Right,
yeah.
Right, so you need to obviously make those roles clear before you group with anybody.
Yeah.
All right, well, this is kind of a related idea with all these specs. What do you guys think about having a dual spec? They haven't talked about this at all. There's a poll in the forums where they asked that question. Do you think you should be able to have a dual spec within your advanced class? I actually wish that it was free-for-all, but 60% of the people say yes, you should be have a dual spec. They want a dual spec within the within one armor class, your chosen armor class, and 40% said no. What do you gals think?
Can someone really quickly define
dual spec? Sorry. Yes, dual spec is where you... Oh, Roxanne, you're the non-WoW player here. Good for you. In WoW, the way it worked is you, like, they introduced this thing later in, like, midway through the current game, I guess, mm-hmm. where you could choose and at the push of a button, essentially, choose from maybe, like, a tanking warrior or your DPS warrior. So you actually have two specs. Talent trees? There's two... No. You have the complete talent tree, and you say, I'm going to spec as a protection warrior, and you put all your points in the three trees, however you distribute them, and that's your one spec. And then you can say, well, and if I want to be a DPS warrior today, now I'm going to start all over again and redistribute all my points in a whole new three set of trees to be a DPS spec. And you can actually, I mean, was there even a cooldown, Carla? Was like 5 minutes or did they?
I think it was very minimal. But, you know, Rift even has this to where they call them rolls, to where you have 8 souls and you can put those in any 3 different souls in one specific role. And you can have up to 4 different roles. So it's like dual spec, but it's quad, you know, it's quad spec, you know, so.
But basically the emphasis being on, you can just sort of like fool around and like change your specs. And yeah, you're right, with Rift, it only, if you're changing within your roles, it costs like 3 gold to just be able to switch all those points around. So it's like, obviously you could do it. You know, I did it like 3 or 4 times in an hour because I kept making, you know, deciding on something different. So yeah, it's like.
Have they even talked about that, though?
For Tor? No.
No, I'm talking about not the dual spec, but I'm talking about respecking. I mean, that opens up a whole nother can of worms.
Actually, James Olin at PAX East said right now they are leaning towards allowing you to respec.
Within your advanced class, right?
I can't remember if he said within your advanced class.
Oh, I don't remember if he said
that. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, but so that's what he said there, right, you know, right now. It's very, you know, caveated. So they haven't, but they haven't decided one.
Well, I am pro dual spec or quad spec or, you know, tri spec.
That seems weird to me.
It is weird. I don't want to have to re-roll. I don't want to have to re-roll a brand new character just because I want to play a different spec.
Well, especially since now you have 3 options open to you if you're in, you know, one of the 75% of the classes. I feel like this just
makes
you... You don't
have to re-roll, though. Can't you re-spec?
That's what we're talking about.
No. If you choose... the way I'm understanding the advanced class, you have to at some point decide, I'm going to be a tank. Okay. You're going to say, and then I think,
but this,
like,
poll was talking about
a dual
specing within the advanced class.
Yeah, these are all kind of related issues. Okay. How much flexibility are players going to get, or how much should they have?
Just pay the 3 gold and respec. It makes no sense to me to be able to, like, switch in the world.
You're still talking about just changing the advanced, that one advanced class. For example, let's take the Imperial Agent. If I wanted to go up the Sniper Tree, and that's my advanced class, and let's say I'm getting kind of bored and I want to play the Operative, am I going to have to re-roll? Because that's a different advanced class. Well, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, especially. It's, you know, and
the advanced class thing makes me a little nervous. I think you should be able to... I am more for, like, you can switch your advanced class than you can have both of them at the same time with a 5-minute cooldown. That is insane. What?
But 60% of the people say that's what they want.
Of course you want it, but because what gamers want and what is good design are, like, you know, kind of not exactly the same thing. I want to be max level and have all the powers in the world. It doesn't mean that, like, it's good.
Well, I haven't looked at this poll recently, but for a while, the advanced class respec poll was the majority were people saying that you shouldn't be able to. Yeah. So,
they had, they had perfectly legitimate, like, immersion reasons.
So the one argument that kind of ticks me off for this is, like, which I saw over and over again, is, like, no, you shouldn't be allowed to dual spec or respec, you know,
because we want our choices to matter. Yeah.
It's like, you know what? We already know that your class story is not affected by your advanced class. So that kind of choice isn't I mean, it's just like it's a mechanical thing. You shouldn't be so married to that. Yeah, that idea. I don't know.
Well, what about the poor people that want to have the PvE spec and the PvP spec?
But that's like within the advanced class, right?
Well, we don't know that.
We don't know anything about PvP.
We don't know anything about PvP and how your talents are gonna. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. A lot of questions
I said this like 5 months ago, but I would be surprised if they don't allow you to change your advanced class with some sort of penalty.
Right, and it shouldn't be easy. I don't really like the you can do it, you know, like back and forth a million times a day. But I don't know. I think for an MMO, and I think when you look at games like Rift and you look at the direction that WoW went towards the end, where you're increasing flexibility, you're increasing player ability to change things up, if Tor decides to take a stand on this and say, you know, you are going to be stuck with this forever, I feel like they're trying to stay in the dark ages a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I think by introducing this idea that so many of the classes now have all these different options, you can do the tanking, you can do the DPS, and or you can do the healing, that's just more things that you want to try with your character.
Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't make sense to not allow changing of your spec or your advanced class. Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, especially because of this.
I bet you'll be able to.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm now in a headspace where I'm like, it would be crazy not to let people.
Is that
do
where
that.
She was? Is that where she was like 8 minutes ago, Carla?
No. But now she agrees with us.
All right. No, I said dual specking was stupid. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, I think if that's probably it for this for this whole topic, we can just end with the final little bit of the April 8th update, which was they had this cool map of Ord Mantell that showed where all the deaths, where all the hotspots were, where people died a lot. So it was very amusing. You can go to the website and check out that map so you can see the places you should avoid when you are on Ord Mantell.
And that brings us up to this last Friday, April the 15th, Friday update, which was our Fan Friday. And we had the extreme honor and pleasure. And we're so excited we were nominated as the Fan Site Spotlight. And we want to thank everybody because we couldn't have done it without everybody. Seriously, BioWare, thank you. Fans, thank you.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. It was really fun to answer those questions. When David Bass talked to us or sent us our questions, we were so excited and so, you know, it was fun to just kind of go back and think about how we started because it seems so long ago when it really hasn't been.
Yeah, it's kind of long ago. We're like almost a year, right?
Well, we're like at 9 months, something like that, I think. Yeah. But yeah, so that was, so for us, the Fan Friday was very exciting, even though I know Fan Fridays are get so much hate.
You guys should care about this one. This one was super important because we were in it.
Yeah, and then they had the typical fan art and avatars, and they had the new fan site kit, which was updated. So you need to be sure and go check those out. And then they had a couple of polls. One of them was, have you joined a guild yet? And only 52% of the people said that they have joined a guild, which I
that
found very interesting.
Actually,
that kind of seemed a little low to me.
Really? Oh,
really?
Wow.
That you're already... Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but anyway. And then they had a poll of what species will you play? And, of course, the most popular seems to be the humans. And the least popular was the Ratataki and the Marilyns. So, nobody wants to play... that's kind of strange, don't you think?
Actually, those would have been my least favorite, too. So, I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe, well, the Ratataki are really odd-looking, so
live underground?
I can't remember. Is that their story?
I hate those ones.
The white-faced and the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we talked about this before, but, like, the Ratataki, they lived underground.
Like mole people.
And it made them super strong. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. You, like, lived in cramped tunnels with all your people away from the sun. Also, they lived underground because, like, the animals of their world forced them underground. So they're, like, the weakest things on that planet.
They are the weakest link.
I was like, oh man, yeah, and it's like they're super fierce warriors because they had to live underground because they were afraid of animals. I'm
Roxanne,
that makes a lot of sense.
You don't understand evolution. So
Well, I chose Chiss. I didn't choose human. What did you choose?
Yeah, I would have chosen human. I like to play humans.
I would have chosen Chiss too. They're super cool.
Yeah.
Is Mira Luka, was that in that poll? I obviously look at it.
Yeah, they were all, we just had the most, they were all kind, yeah, Mira Luka and Chiss,
awesome.
They came about the same,
yeah.
I can't remember. Anyway,
you'll see them hiding in caves.
Stop. We'll have a link in our show notes to that poll if you want to vote.
And then finally, no, it's not even finally. It is our next update was that BioWare is going to have a booth at E3. June 7th through the 9th in LA. So get your tickets because I went to the E3 site. It looks like they're on sale.
Isn't E3 only industry, though?
Like press.
Yeah.
Press. Yeah, so let's not mislead our fans into thinking they can just hop on the site and go.
Yeah, but anyway, it's industry related.
Right.
You know, you have to be an industry field.
Okay, and I think rounding up the last Friday update was actually, and this is why people should not be complaining about this past Friday update, because this community Q&A was filled with just all these great gameplay kind of questions. William Wallace, am I in the right place? Yes, William Wallace, the senior game designer, took on a bunch of different questions. Oh, you know what? We skipped something, didn't we? Sorry. we'll just quickly go over there was the Studio Insider, sorry, which is Environment.
We're rewinding.
Environment Polish. Yeah, sorry. My name is Kathy, not Carla. I'm not reading this list properly. And Robbie Lamb, the senior environment artist, gave us just sort of a rundown on the kinds of stuff that he does as a... What, an environment?
Environmental artist.
Yeah. He talked about lighting. He talked about adding props.
I don't know what he does. I sort of, from reading it, I got that it was he assembles assets inside the engine. So, like, I don't know if he, like, models or... So I guess he assembles the environments or whatever. But his entire post was on polish and how important it is to, like, have things optimized and that, you know, that the 90 to 100%, like, phase... of development, which is always the most fun,
right? But, and I thought it was interesting. You talked about how they have to think about game performance. So when they're creating, you know about this, like the number of polygons. Yeah. Oh yeah, Roxanne's looking at me like, yeah, of course.
What? Of course. I mean, yes. Optimization is something you have to like think about when you open Max for the first time. You're like, okay, like polygons and draw
calls.
Anyway,
I thought
like
it was
that.
Cool.
No, performance is really important. Yep.
All right. Now Carla can do her part that I tried to do.
Yep. Well, we have a link to the community Q&A. There were several questions that were asked, and one of them was, will all classes have a main companion character, or will there be several different ones, and how important will your companion characters be? And the answer to that was that there's going to be many companion characters, as we well know, and that it'll be up to you whether you have a main one or not.
Oh, but the companion characters are basically going to fit roles, right? So
right.
You have, like, your tanking companion, your DPS, your healing companion.
Right, he said by the time you're at
max level.
But
max level, you're going to have one of each. So
at least one of each.
At least one of each.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. And the next one, so far, 6 of the 8 classes have a healing spec, assuming the Sith Inquisitor can heal. Will this be the final number, or will Jedi Knight and Sith Warrior have a healing spec as well? And they basically said, no, they're not going to add healing to the classes that don't have it.
That, freaks.
What? Anyway, that's the final distribution of healing for now. They always like to use those phrases.
For now, yes, for now. And the next question was, will the healer spec for each class have enough damage output to be viable while solo? And the answer was, all are going to be viable for solo, but dedicated healers will have a lower DPS.
Right. I kind of felt like the answer to that is, you know, that's kind of what the companions are for, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that was one of the things that people were excited about. Like, if you want to be the dedicated healer, you don't have to go out and try and DPS. If you don't want to, you can get one of your companions that's going to be able to fill that hole for you. So basically, he was saying, and then, you know, define viable. People, you know, what I consider viable for solo play might, you know, are they saying, is it going to be as good as, like, the regular, the straight DPS person? Well, I think it's pretty clear the answer to that's going to be no. but yeah, I think the William Wallace is just trying to emphasize that, you know, your companions are going to be able to help you out when you need it. All right, so next question. Will both skill sets in a particular advanced class require the same set of stats? This is what we were just talking about. So basically, they're asking, are you going to be able to use gear, if you have one set of gear, is it going to fulfill all your functions? And essentially the answer is no.
Yep.
Nope, so. Nada. Then the next question was, can the Sentinel play the role of secondary tank, since the Guardian can DPS? Sentinels, the answer is, the Sentinels can off-tank on smaller encounters, but is not a substitute for tanking Guardian. I mean, in other words, they're saying that if it's a major incursion or flashpoint, you probably want to get a guardian.
A lot of these answers are kind of similar. So they're always saying that, like, yeah, you can kind of do it, but the dedicated role is always going to be better.
Which is what you expect.
Which seems sort of
obvious. Right.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you just want to you ask the question just to see how they're going to answer it. Yeah. So, all right, well, let's move on. Can stealth classes turn their stealth on during a fight? And we talked about that a little bit, that it's only the right.
The stealth classes cannot. However,
warrior jerk is going to be able to do it. So yes. So he specifically, this is where we got this, specifically no, this for the scoundrel, the operative, the shadow, and the assassin, they will not be able to do that, but the marauder will be able to. So yep, interesting.
Alrighty, and the next question is, does the type of armor a class uses change depending upon the advanced class?
And we talked about that also.
Exactly. Of course it has to.
Depends on the class, depends on the spec. All right, moving on. Will there be different important skills within a skill tree to choose between, or will there be an ideal way, in quotes, ideal, for each skill tree? And I guess what they're asking is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, are you going to have this spec if you say that you're a tank, the tank trooper, are you going to have to do this specific spec? Or be laughed off as some kind of noob. And, you know, of course, their answer was, you know, our design philosophy on skill trees is to offer several different paths through which each skill tree for gameplay variety. So basically they're saying we want to give everyone as many options as possible.
I read that answer and I heard yes. Because they were saying that, like...
Really?
Yeah, well, remember they said that, like, there's going to be a correct way to... There's no one correct way to spec... There's two correct ways, which is basically like one, because they're saying you can do it for PvP or PvE, but like...
Don't you feel like they were trying to say no?
They were trying to say no, but really I could hear the yes.
They were trying to say no, don't worry, you're going to be able to do spec however you want, it's going to be awesome.
But there's going to be two that are better, yeah, depending on PvP or PvE.
You so hear that little voice back there?
There's the for public consumption answer, and then there's the real answer.
Okay, well, that brings us to our final topic, and that is our podcast will not be released until Monday, tomorrow, the 18th. And there was an announcement on Twitter just a few minutes ago from the main SWTOR Twitter feed that BioWare is going to be hosting their first fan site summit April 25th through 26th in Austin, Texas.
And the reason why we care is...
because we're going!
Hooray!
Yay!
Well, two of us are.
Some of us are going.
Roxanne is staring sulkily at the mic. Yeah, it was a... BioWare invited two people from each podcast, and the difficult actually decision fan you've sites made.
And or
sorry for fan sites. Yeah, right. there are summer podcasts, summer fan sites. We'll go ahead and let all the other sites announce themselves, but we'll be seeing some of our friends from the podcasts that you know from your listening habits
that you know and love.
Yeah. So yes, it was only two. So. We uninvited Roxanne. I'm sorry, Roxanne.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm just going to sit at home and weep.
So we'll hopefully have real interesting things to report when we get back. That's happening next weekend. And then we'll probably record shortly after that. So look for that. And I'm sure we'll be doing tweets from the Fansite Summit and hopefully posting pictures and trying to talk to some important people while we're there. All right, so we're down to the quick mentions. We're just going to blow through these. If you haven't already seen it, we did finally release our James Olin PAX East interview, which is just the audio, but you can go see that on our site. Damian Schubert mentioned, I thought this was funny, he said the loading screen is going to have kind of a class quest recap, because someone was asking, are we gonna, or was it, what was it like, it was still gonna be sort of like previously on tour for your class, so you'll be able to read your little excursions in your class while you wait for the game to load.
Is that just for your class quest? Or?
I think he said just class quest. We'll have a link.
That reminds me of, like, in Echo Bazaar, how you can do the reminisce, but only for your ambition. So you can, like, go back and see what you've done, probably just because that's your longest quest chain of right. all your quest chains.
Right, right. Oh, that's interesting. And finally, Buffed.D, which is a German publication, there's some stuff coming out from their press event. One of the things was that the next war zone is going to be the Void Star. They actually... And this is all kind of like now we're at the point where it's just coming from maybe like comments from people on like your Darth Hater. I read someone who said they had translated stuff, so I hate there's like a whole list of things that they highlights that they mention. But the one of the things I thought was interesting, and I'm just going to say it because I think this one might be true because I remember Brandon from Torocast talking about this, is that tanks in PvP are going to have. They're going to be rewarded for tanking, and it's like I think how it works is they actually absorb damage to the other from your party members. So it's kind of changing the role of tanks in Warzone. So I think that's kind of neat. So hopefully we'll be able to get more official information from that event. And I think that wraps it up for us on quick mentions. And for the biggest news on tour.
Sid. Strong am I with the Force.
Or Jedi.
Last time we found out that Carla and I try to do the right thing, but our generosity has limits, at which point it's every man for himself.
And we also found out that Roxanne will allow herself to be the doorman to the world. If only because she can't figure out a way to get out of being nice. So far, our scores stand at Carla, -6, Kathy, +9, Roxanne, +2. Remember, negative scores reflect a dark side tendency, while positive scores reflect a light side tendency.
All right, are you ready for your Sith or Jedi challenge?
Yes. No. Yes.
All right, then be silent. The test of the movie theater seating. You walk into the nearly empty movie theater 20 minutes early so that you can get the seats behind the rail. You settle in with your popcorn and your drink, and you prop your feet up on that rail. The theater slowly fills up, and by the time the trailers start, the theater's pretty full. Just as the third trailer starts, a couple appears in the aisle and scans your row. There are only single seats left. "Excuse me," the woman says to you. "Could you move down so we can sit together?" You look and realize that if you do as she requests, you will lose your comfy footrest. What do you do? 1. Sigh inwardly, but move over. 2. Stare blankly and shout, "Ke?" 3. Glare stonily and say, "If you wanted these seats, you should have arrived early, like I did." All right, Carla, How are you about movie theater seating etiquette?
I am cackling because I love the answer to number two. I absolutely love it. Honestly, I'm going backwards. I would probably sigh and move over because I'm really not married to a particular seat, and I don't usually prop my feet up anyway, you know, so... And I would want someone to do the same for me.
Oh, you're so good.
But I love number two.
That actually, I have to say, Roxanne's sister Carrie came up with, I guess, which shows what kind of person she is.
A racist person.
Anyway, okay, Roxanne, what would you do?
You have to do number one, especially because this week the neutral option is actually pretty aggressive. And if we look at my track record with Sith or Jedi, I'm usually the path of least resistance.
Which in this case nice one.
You have to... It's kind of sucks that, they waited until the trailers to, show up and then ask you to move, because it's sort of, not okay to talk to people in a movie theater once that has happened. But, you know, if you're mean about it, and then you're gonna end up sitting in between the girlfriend and boyfriend, and that's just gonna be, super awkward. No, so you're, pissing off people that, you're gonna have to spend the next, 2 hours with.
And I will just go ahead and say ahead that I would also choose number one. So we have all three chosen the light side. Having something to rest your feet on shouldn't take precedence over letting someone have a decent seat. Although, yes, you do kind of want to get... It is irritating, though, because you took the time to get there early. Why couldn't they?
Remember, though, when we were at PAX and we were at the panels and you were, swearing... Not, you were, move the heck in! Because there were, people leaving seats in between people.
Oh, yes.
Because that's what you do, just because you don't want to sit next to a stranger if you don't have to. Because we're all antisocial jerks. But, you know, it's a panel. Eventually, it's going to fill all the way up, so it's you know, you should move in and fill in those seats. And Mom was like,
for the record, I was not swearing. Not loudly, anyway.
Loud enough that they could hear you. Not swearing, but oh my god, move in. And I'm dying of secret shame. That's the theme for PAX.
Secret shame. All right. So anyway, I guess we're all, you know. Do you remember that one time, were you with us that one time when we were at the theater and that woman tried to tell that girl she couldn't save seats?
That's always awkward. Yeah. That's the Seinfeld thing where there's a social grace, but to point out when people breach social graces is a breach of social graces.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
It's you were all wrong and now we have to watch.
No. It's so I was sitting in the theater waiting and there was all of a sudden we heard this woman try to sit down in the row behind us. And there was a girl, she was probably in high school or middle school. And she's like, oh, those seats are taken. No, my parents are coming. And the woman goes, you're not allowed to save seats. She just refuses to move. And the girl, the girl is like, are you kidding me? And she says, no, if you have a problem with it, then go get an usher.
And
so
she did.
Which she did,
yeah.
Which was awesome.
God bless her.
Yes. And so she got up and she got the usher, and the usher comes over and he's like, ma'am, you're allowed to save seats. And she just got in this big huff and left the aisle. And
you can tell that was a gamble where she was pretty sure that she could intimidate this younger girl and that she wouldn't go get an usher. So kudos to that kid. Wherever she is.
Yeah, I hope she's a Curl and Run Radio podcast listener and she's all excited that we're telling her story.
She definitely is.
Yeah, but guys...
All our listeners are awesome.
It's kind of annoying when people save this big old row of seats. I mean, come on.
It's not a row.
It was two. It was her parents. So.
Well, where were her parents? They should have been there.
They were parking. Carla. Oh, geez, Carla.
It's you a know, kid. You want the kid to be able to sit with their parents, you know?
Right. Well, they should be with the parents getting the sausage.
But do you really think that it's a, you're going to be well, I'm taking your parents' seat. Now I'm going to sit next to you. That's weird. And now the parents are going to sit somewhere else.
I'm only messing with you. I would have saved 2 seats anyway.
I was going to say, you lose your points.
I hope that we go to a movie someday, all three of us, and I am not going to save you a seat.
Hey, now, I just said I would save you one.
I take it back.
All right,
I'll save you two seats.
All right, so for the rest of you out there, you can read all the past and Sith or Jedi tests on our site at CorelliaRun.com. Keep score and see which way you lean.
That sound means it's time for the community buzz, where we take a look at the things that the fans are talking about. And the first one is really kind of funny. I have to laugh because I don't know how. Do y'all plan on romancing your companions?
Well, of course.
Anyway, let me get it. It's about romancing companion characters versus your moral choices. And we have a link to it in our show notes. And it says, can you lose your companion? And what he's talking about is if he wants to be a dark side person, does he have to be nice to his companion in order to get her in the sack?
Right. Not lose your companion, but just be able to sleep with your companion.
Right. I just think this whole line is just hilarious.
Well, and the answer is ultimately, I mean, I guess the...
is yes. Come on.
It's like, yeah, you are going to have to moderate your actions.
Listen,
around
because him. All NPCs are going to have... they have, like, basic, like, tendencies. Like, what they think good is, what they think evil is. So, like, and what he responded... Who was the dev who was talking about this?
Oh, I can't remember. Do you have that, Carla?
Oh, man!
Why don't you have it?
Oh, wasn't that Randy?
Was Randy Bagel.
Okay. So what he said was, like, well, don't worry. Like, there's going to be romances that align with that, like, dark side mentality. But if you really have your heart set on, like, you know, the really, like, happy, let's help orphans person, yeah. If you want to romance her, you're not going to be able to kill orphans in front of her or be, like, super mean to, like, widows trying to cross the street. Like, yeah. Because they're, you know, they're people with likes and dislikes, so you have to, like, cater to them.
Yeah, I wonder how the poster took that answer. Yeah. I didn't read the follow-up. But yeah, the bottom line is, you know, once you figure out what your companion likes and dislikes, mm-hmm. you're going to have to make sure you're with the right person when you're doing
X, Y, Z
action.
Okay, in Dragon Age 2, like, my party makeup was always determined by the type of quest it was. So if it was, like, given by, like, the Chantry or the Church, I wouldn't, like, bring, like, my crazy anarchist friends who hated the Chantry. I, like, starting to play that game, I was like, oh my god, these are the most judgmental group of people ever. I can't do anything without, like, pissing people off. But then I kind of got into it, because it's awesome to, like, have to, like, just think on that level to be like, okay, well, I have to keep secrets from, like, from half my party, or I have to, like, act a certain way to, like, appease, like, some of them. It's, like, really, it's really interesting to think of them as, like, people who have, you know, like, tendencies, and you can't just, they're not just gonna think you're God, like,
well, anyway,
no matter,
yeah.
like, what
did you
do.
So, did you enjoy having to sort of strategize your party based on things that you thought might happen?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah, it was interesting, just, like, a way of thinking. It was a little annoying sometimes, because I'm like, oh, man, like, Anders is the only viable healer in this game, and I can't bring him, or else I'm gonna, like, lose faction points with him. But also, you have to keep in mind that, you know, they care about everything you do, pretty much, but it's incremental. So you might get, like, -5, +10, whatever, but there's so many actions that take place in the game that you can, like, make up difference, like, if you, like, totally, like, screw something up. There's a couple decisions that, like, party members will really, really care about, like, if it's a quest that's centered around them, or if it's, like, a really important, like, decision that they really care about, that might be, like, game-changing, where it's, like, 30 points, as opposed to, like, 5.
All right. So, yeah, I bet that there will be ways that you can, like, get good, better, like, get in the good graces of the companions that you're starting to piss off, you know, buy
in
them
Dragon
flowers.
Age, in Dragon Age, you can give them gifts, it's wonderful. Yeah.
But, you know, what I liked about this whole laughable thing here is the fact that you don't gain light side points just for being nice to someone, just like you don't gain dark side points for being
a jerk. Also, romances.
So I like that.
Romances and, like, companion, your, like, friendship with your companion, I assume, is not going to be based on light side, dark side. Because you're probably going to have, like, a separate meter that shows you how good a friend you are, like, with
them. Well, you have your affection rating.
Right, okay, so that. You're going to have. Which is what I just said.
Yeah, we actually have a name for it. And we also know that one of the things that it can be affected by their affection rating is how well they perform some of their crew skills.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have, like, impacts, like, your gameplay. So, yes, this is all going to be very complex and and tied into some weird stuff that you're always going to have to be thinking about what you do. And I really like that.
One of the people on this, like, forum, I think it was, like, on around where we linked to, was like, well, will you just be able to, like, order them to? I was like, what, to sleep with you? I believe we call that rape. It's like, I'm your boss. It's like, that's weird, dude. You shouldn't voice those opinions on the internet.
No comment.
I'm looking at you out of the corner of my eye.
Look at you, Darth Malgus. Yeah. All right, so this is something that I've been thinking about. Moving on to a different topic, this idea, the social points, they sort of made me think about this, is just the concept or the issue of socialization in MMOs in general. Do you remember when we had Joanne LaRoche on, and she talked about that experience of her trying out a new game without any of her friends? So she was trying this brand new game and didn't know anybody in the game, and how frustrating it was when she kept dying and she was just about ready to pack the whole thing in. And, you know, like, this one person, stranger, reached out to her and said, do you need help? Because they could see that she was dying constantly. And she said, yes. And they became, like, buddies. And it was just, like, this one person who came out and said, do you need help? And then she started that started the ball rolling of meeting new people, getting a new community, and how that enriched her experience. So I love that story. And I'm wondering how Tor is going to, or if Tor is trying to come up with ways to encourage socialization. I know they say they have their flesh points, and they're encouraged. They're going to give you points for doing this. You know, you'll get social points for winning conversations. And, but there's that step, especially with all the new people who I think who have never maybe played an MMO before. There's that, some people are going to be more outgoing than others, but I think a lot of people are going to kind of stick to themselves. And like Roxanne, you're not the most sociable person in an MMO.
I'm not, but I always help people if they ask, mm-hmm. or, like, I always talk to them, and I sort of feel like the people coming from the single player experience are going to be a little nicer because they haven't learned to be elitist jerks yet. Like, because I mean, like, part of the worst experience you can have is if you ask for help and people are like, noob, like, you should have come into the world knowing all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I mean, maybe for a lot of the people who come from, like, Mass Effect and Dragon Age, like, this will be their first MMO. I know that, like, BioWare is hoping that, like, they're going to be able to kind of, like, synthesize those two audiences. And I am kind of optimistic that, like, that group of people is going to be, like, more willing to help each other.
Well, Carla, you and I talked about this recently. We were talking about how in, like, say in World of Warcraft, do you remember in the early days? I mean, people would randomly come up to you all the time and just talk to you and chat, you know, in using say, or there were conversations going on, or people would, you know, invite you to their group. But I just felt like that happened a lot. Towards the end, like in the through Lich King and Cataclysm, it definitely, I think people were getting jaded and were kind of in their own little groups, and there was less of the socialization. Did you feel that way? Was that your experience in World of Warcraft?
I not only in World of Warcraft, it kind of followed me, not me personally, but I think it's just gaming. It's a rift.
Yes.
Because, after we talked about it, I sat there and at the mailbox and wondered, you know, why are people not talking to
each
other?
Right, so, yeah, well, let me just say that when I went to Rift, I didn't really know anybody. I knew you, Carla, and obviously mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know that we've done that much in-game talking, but anyway, but I knew you were there and I for my support system if I needed it. But right. I was almost kind of performing this little experiment. I was like, well, I'm going to see what it's like. Here's a brand new MMO. Nobody knows what's going on. I'm pretty new into the game. Let's see if things are different. And when I talked to you, I've been playing for a good 3 weeks or something. And I said,
right.
So I've been just sort of playing on my own. And last night was the first time a stranger addressed me directly. You know? I mean, I could have done it, and I'm sure I probably would have had a decent experience, but I was kind of curious just to see what the environment was like. And so I kept to myself. I played with my husband. And he says he's played on his own also without me. And he said, yeah, nobody has talked to him the whole time he's playing. So that makes me a little worried about what it's going to be like.
No, that's my kind of MMO. No hassling.
But, you know, that kind of is what, is this what, you know, MMOs are evolving into? I mean, we see the guild recruitment threads, you see them in trade chat of guild leaders recruiting for their guild, and is it out of, you know, loneliness that some of these people actually respond to those threads or those recruitment ads or whatever? Because like you, I don't think until, and it's very strange, it must have been the same guy, but until last night, there's one friendly person in the whole game. Until last night, I had never been addressed by anybody except the guild members.
Yeah.
No one outside the guild has ever talked to me at all. And last night I had somebody, I was standing at the mailbox mailing some stuff off, and this guy came up and said, oh, hey, I really like your name. And so we just chatted for a few minutes. I said, well, thank you. And we chatted a bit, and he went on about his merry way. But that's the first time I had anybody say anything to me that was not in the guild.
Right. And I think even you said that even you yourself, you think that you are less outgoing to strangers than you used to be. You're kind of like in your own world now.
And I don't know why I am. I do know why. And I'm wondering if I am like maybe the majority or at least 50% of the people out there. I become very cynical.
Yes.
You know, jaded, because, right. Yes, because you know, we have had so many people, you know, try to take advantage of situations, whether it be, you know, they try to rip you off when you trade with them something, or they talk trash, or they're egotistical maniacs, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you're afraid to talk to new people.
Right.
And I hate that. Because
they might be a jerk or like whiny or bother you all the time. Isn't that terrible? I mean,
it is terrible, but I mean, during my last few months of WoW, you know, I met someone that, he asked about our guild name, and I carried on a long conversation with him. And then it was like, every time I logged on, he would message me, and it was like, he attached himself to me, and he was a nice guy, but oh my gosh, you know, it's just like everything. Well, how do I do this quest? And how do I do that? And, you know, it's like I had a stalker, you know, and I feel bad because I know he was just lonely and reaching out.
I had a good experience talking to you. I'm going to add you to my friends list. And in my head, I'm like, oh, please don't. Like...
But, you know, I miss that about the game. I miss the sense of socialization, that meeting new people that you haven't met before and, you know, finding a connection. I mean, well, early on, look what we did. We met in game.
Oh my god, we met because you were spamming trade chat.
I was one of those spammers.
You were advertising for your guild. I would never join a guild that was doing that nowadays. But I was like,
right.
But back
check
then,
out this loser.
I know. It's so funny. But yeah, it's like we have become so cynical and so jaded that I was
standing in the middle of Iron Forge, Iron Forge, shouting in all caps. Like, I'm impressed.
I know.
But I didn't do it in all caps, you silly woman.
That was like, yeah, that's right. But that was like the one, that was probably one of the most important things that I did to promote, that affected my game experience.
This podcast wouldn't exist if
that
hadn't happened.
That's right. If Carla hadn't been this lame guild spammer. So, I know. So I think it's really, people, you know, everyone listening out there, you know, you try to, you know, open yourself to these opportunities, because you don't want to go into this brand new game being so cynical and so jaded that you're going to miss out on meeting people. Roxanne.
Exactly. Hey. I mean, you need to meet people, but there are people like Roxanne and like my husband who loves the solo play and don't talk to me. I don't know. I don't want to know you.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like that's pretty reflective of the way I am with like all social interaction, though, where I'm just like a little more reserved, a little introverted. But I mean, like, I don't hate people. I can be convinced. It just takes me a little while to engage. So, like, random person running up to me while I'm fishing, I automatically, I'm like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
Yeah, so I hope that Tor has, like, fun gathering spaces where people will feel more free to, you know, maybe just talk to the room in general. You know, I don't know if there's Pazak or...
Yeah. But, you know, I thought about that. And with the games like Pazak or maybe having the dancing, Star Wars Galaxies used to have, you used to actually earn points if you got up and you danced and people had to watch and you had to have so many people watch. And I mean, there were social interaction because you talked. I mean, that's a kind of a funky thing, but you know what I mean? It was part of the game, okay?
Yes, yes.
The more people watching you, the more experience you get.
In more ways than one. No, I'm just go back to that morality thing. Anyway, I hope that they go back to something that allows us to meet new people and to get back that social feeling.
I'm like,
of early gaming.
I mean, like, I never really cared about like Azeroth or whatever, but I'm really excited just for the opportunity to like hang out with other BioWare fans, you know? Like, I really am excited about that. I have two friends who play like Mass Effect and Dragon Age in real life, and we just like talk for like forever, and I don't live around them, so I don't like engage with them that much, but I just, the idea of being around like thousands of people who like play BioWare games and just to be able to like, I don't know, like geek out and like talk to them is actually really exciting for me, and you know, just to hang out with other Star Wars fans. So I hope, yeah, I agree with Carla. I hope that there's like just opportunities for like socialization, just to like talk about the game and stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm really hoping that they do something. I mean, even I think that Blizzard tried to do something towards the end of WoW. And I don't mean WoW is ending, but I mean towards the end of me playing.
WoW killer talk.
Oh, yes. I'm WoW killer. Oh, absolutely. But they're towards the end of me playing because they did the random dungeon finder so people could find groups together. Maybe if BioWare did something similar, but it only be on your server. See, the problem was that it was multiple across servers that Blizzard did. So you really never got to know those people, and you never even want to talk to them again.
Hmm.
You know, and that also encouraged people to be ninjas.
Right.
You know.
Yep.
And if that was on your same server, their attitude and their behavior might be a little better.
Hmm. I think you're being a little optimistic, but you could be right.
I'm like that. Okay, well, whatever.
Anyway, all right, well, good. Okay, well, I think we're done here. We've hit every single possible thing we could have talked about. We'll have many, many links. We actually didn't cover all the community Q&A. There are a few, if you want to see the whole thing and you haven't had a chance to, go and check that out, because there's some interesting stuff in there. All right, well, we want to thank BioWare for featuring us in this month's Fansite Spotlight. We were, as Carla said, we were extremely honored and excited. And thank you to all of our listeners, because, you know, just the good word of mouth that we get and the nice things when you take the time to review us on iTunes or to post something on the forums, we usually see it, and we're always just really, really grateful to you. So thanks. Speaking of people who have done those things, there have been Kevin Martin and Elcat left us a couple of positive reviews on iTunes, and in the Fan Friday comment section, we got some nice shout outs from Darth Raw Kane, Solepsis, B Wang, and Voleo. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
And you can contact us through our website at CorellianRun.com. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a Twitter button and a Facebook button. You can just click it to join our Twitter or Facebook pages. You can also leave us a voicemail message at 281-766-4511. And you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Zune. That wraps it up for us here at Corellian Run Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon. Until next time, I'm Carla.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm Roxanne. May the Force be with you.
And may you never kill your companion. Unless, of course, you want to. You have been listening to Corellian Run Radio, a Star Wars The Old Republic podcast. Tune in next time to hear Roxanne say...
When I play Tor, I'm never going to talk to anybody.
End transmission.